This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Staub Audio Engineering. If you have listened to any of the episodes, you have undoubtedly heard me talk about Mike and the phenomenal audio engineering work that he does. His mixes and masters are truly some of the best that I've ever heard. I love working with Mike on all of our Dreamfield tunes, on all of our Summit One tunes. He is an absolute wizard. Make sure to hit him up, inquire about mixing and mastering prices, and take your tracks to the next level. Oh, yeah. And Mike is also one of the nicest, kindest human beings you'll ever meet. Definitely hit him up and work with him.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all of the producers, artists, and creators that are tuning into the show. My name is Cody Christensen, and you are listening to the Chilled Samples Podcast.
Man, it's an absolute pleasure to have you on. Just to kick it off, man, how's everything going with you?
It's been all right. I'm kind of taking a little bit of a hiatus in my life right now with a lot of things. There's been lots of change recently, music related and just life related as well. But I think, you know, I'm coming out of like a kind of rough period over the summer. Mm-hmm. So like I'm really excited for the next few months to see where it takes me.
Yeah, man. Well, and it's interesting to when you zoom out and you look at life in chapters, or even if you look at life in like quarters, like quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four, it can get pretty intense when you start to analyze the ups and downs. And it's funny, man, I've had a lot of really good days in a row. And for some reason this morning, it was just tough. And I wake up, my alarm's set for 5:30 every day. I run 5 days a week. Like I've set up my life so that it's relatively difficult. So I never want to say that it's easy. Yeah. Thanks, man. Well, and it keeps me level. So it's never easy to say, hey, I'm going out and I'm running 10 miles or 6 miles or however many miles. Like it's never easy. Easy is the wrong word, but I've conditioned myself to be able to do it. But this morning it was really freaking hard, man. Like I did a 10K, which is 6.2 miles. And like just every step was a challenge. And of course I'm going through self-talk, and I'm like, well, what would I tell my friends and what would my friends tell me in these moments? And it's like, oh yeah, it's temporary. You can't have your best days without the worst days. And so it's all secular. And, I think continuously reminding myself is huge. If I'm going through a rough patch or a dark period of like, okay, this is temporary. What action can I do to get through it? And and Carter, I definitely want to dive into that, man, because that's where life's biggest learning moments come from. There's those moments. But before we dive deep, Carter, can you just share a little bit about your project and who you are for the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm primarily known as a lo-fi producer. My project, J-Bridge, was started, I was in high school. I don't know, it might have been like 4 years ago, maybe. Or it might have been even more than that, actually. I think 2017 was when I first released music under J-Bridge. But it's been kind of a journey with that project to kind of figure out where I wanted to take it. I started off like not really knowing what type of music I wanted to really create with that. Like there was a lot of, you know, trying to figure out even what I wanted to name the project too. Like there was a lot of that. But I kind of finally settled on this like lo-fi instrumental study beat type thing, like chill hop instrumental stuff. I finally got like a little bit of success within that community. I worked with Kind Brew. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're this record. Yeah. They're the record label I worked with. And I was actually one of the first artists that worked with them when they had like,
nice,
like
man.
10 followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good time to get in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and it's, so 2017, and it's kind of, it's interesting how as technology progresses and, it are like 2017 seems like such a long time ago when in all reality it wasn't, but it seems like so much has happened, man. So, I guess, what was your perspective on the instrumental study beat, lo-fi, chill hop scene at that moment? And then I kind of what led to you wanting to pursue that identity of being an artist in that particular community, in that particular genre?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first started like realizing what it really was, like the community and stuff, and like how I really fit into it, it was a little bit scary at first because I listened to lots of lo-fi and was really inspired by it, but I also felt like from the beginning that it might have not allowed me to be as creative as I wanted to, because I feel like sometimes within particularly like the study beats like genre and like sleep type beats, there's a very I feel like there's a very specific criteria that people are looking for. And so actually with the first beat that I released and submitted to the label, they had like some suggestions to like make it shorter, you know, really make it fit better for like playlists and stuff like that. And so right from the beginning, I was a little bit wary of that side of just the industry, I guess, with like regarding like instrumental beats and stuff. But it turned out to like not be as big of a deal as I thought, because I found myself, I found myself deciding to go that route anyway and found myself gravitating towards that type of music. Like regardless. So I think like, I think if I really didn't want to pursue that identity for myself and like have myself, you know, try and make a name for myself within that community, I don't think I would have allowed myself to, you know, I think I would have chose to do something different, but because I felt like I was still able to express myself creatively and do what I wanted to, I felt like it was a really nice kind of harmonious like relationship with like, you know, me and then the people helping me release my music, you know. It was like a very, very, you know, team effort type of thing.
Yeah, well, and that's a and it that's such a great point. And I'm not sure when you released Remembering. I forgot to look at the release date, but as I was listening to that tune of yours and listening to those like flutter synth, there was some really interesting and unique sound design.
That I really appreciate that.
Sound that, of course, man, that sounds you uniquely you. And, it's interesting kind of the evolution of our individual art when we first enter a new community, because when I first started creating lo-fi and chill hop, I actually had the exact opposite experience, and now I was primarily releasing independent, and I came from the electronic world where I'd been producing future bass and dubstep and house music, and I was following the formula, trying to emulate Zomboy and Skrillex and really try to emulate the artists that I looked up to most, and I felt like there was a lot of rules. And when I first entered the lo-fi scene, it almost felt like I was able to engage in like abstract art, because I at first I didn't care
about anybody's perspective. Like I was coming from these really intense writing sessions where it might take me 35 to 60 hours to finish a dubstep tune. Where when I first started creating lo-fi, and like I could create a track and have it pretty much finished within 3 to 4 hours. I felt so creatively free. So it's interesting how we can have different paths when we're first entering the genre. But when you were creating it in 2017, what were the numbers? What were the statistics like in comparison to what you're seeing in 2022?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so when I first released, I believe it was in 2017, it was independent. And so I didn't really have a plan for the music I was releasing at the time. I was really, really, I guess I could say, like taking big steps in my producing ability. And like at that point in my journey in producing, I was like making some serious progress with like my sound design. I remember the summer of that year, I went on a trip with my family. And this is actually kind of what started my whole like a whole entire era of like my producing development. But I took my laptop with me, and FL Studio, which is the program that I use to produce, has a synthesizer called Citrus. It's an FM synthesizer. And on that trip, I told myself that I would learn how to use it and like become fluent in it. And ever since then, mm-hmm. like I learned it, and it's the only synth that I use now. I use it for everything, and I do everything from scratch, man. Just with that synth. And so that the first project I released for J-Bridge that year, it was a huge step in that area of my production because I was designing all these sounds and getting really experimental. And at this point, it wasn't necessarily lo-fi that I was making. They were still instrumental beats. I didn't necessarily start with lo-fi, because I believe that it was the first release that I, for J-Bridge, was like, I think it was like an EP, and it was more like, it was almost like future bass-esque. I still have it on like my SoundCloud and stuff, and maybe like Bandcamp, I can't remember, during that time, like I didn't have a plan for that music at all. So it was really like more of a progression at that point, you know? It's just like, you know, this is where I'm at right now, and let me put it out because it's mm-hmm. like one of the first things I'm really like proud of. And then once I started working with Kind Brew, it really shocked me how it progressed with like just traction in the lo-fi community, because I just wasn't expecting any of that. So it was very surprising.
Yeah, well, it's surprising, and I think we're still in such an infant stage for our community and for our scene as a whole when you compare it to any other genre within the music industry. And I think we're extremely fortunate that we have the opportunity with either young projects or young artists to be able to start navigating those relationships with labels, only being a year in or two years in or even 3 years in, because my main frame of reference, once again, coming from the electronic world, is you have to grind so hard to even get a small label to be interested in you. And we're kind of in this unique period where labels and artists are growing simultaneously together, which is extremely special. And I think it, and along with the openness towards collaboration, the openness towards feedback, and the lack of competitiveness amongst each other, which I know it still exists. It's going to exist in any industry, any genre, but I rarely experience it in comparison to the electronic world, where it's a everyday occurrence and everybody's trying to climb over each other rather than pulling each other up, which is beneficial for everybody else. But yeah, how absolutely. So Yeah, so we were talking about like the traction of the statistics. How have you seen the community of artists change?
So I think part of it actually has to do with what you were just talking about in terms of like it's like not like competing in that sort of thing. Because I would agree, like it seems like such a different world than a lot of other places in the music industry, you know, like within the lo-fi community, like it feels very accessible in a lot of ways. And part of that is due to the style of music. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's, you know, it's almost intuitive, you know, picking up on lo-fi and trying to make it, you know, it seems very natural, I feel like. And then, mm-hmm. you know, just the, you know, when it comes to the artists, you know, within the lo-fi community, I mean, one of the cool things about lo-fi is, you know, I think a lot of artists really embody the type of vibe that lo-fi, you know, emits, right? It's very relaxing, aesthetically very pleasing in a lot of ways. And I think a lot of artists really, without meaning to even, embody that, you know, energy. Mm. And so when a lot of smaller artists, you know, look at all these other artists that are like, you know, have lots of traction, you know, like, you know, the fair amount of them, you know, well, you can get in touch with them, you know, DM them, they'll respond to you, you know, like you see that these are just like people, you know, they're mm-hmm. real people. And that's what I really love about the lo-fi industry in a lot of ways is that the people behind the projects, like I feel very similar to them in a lot of ways. I feel like I could relate to them, you know, and I feel like, you know, they're not like some big brand, like, you know, pop culture thing, you know, it's there's people, you know, that are putting a lot into these instrumental beats that, you know, they're creating like beautiful pieces of art, you know, truly. It's really something special, I think.
I agree, Carter. And I think from my perspective, a lot of that is the separation of the ego in regards to our brands within this community, because we're not some people are playing shows for sure, but we're not headlining, we're not selling out big venues. There's a lot of separation, and I really appreciate that. And we know that most listeners of lo-fi are passive, and that's okay. That's great. I think from my perspective, the coolest part about that is even if we're not directly collaborating with each other on a track, we're collaborating with each other on the music as a whole for yeah. listeners and fans of lo-fi. And I think that's really special. And that might be where this camaraderie and this teamwork and these friendships are kind of rooted in, maybe without even saying it. And I'm Carter, I'm making this up as I go, so I could be wrong, but this is but I think that may be pretty valid as like if you really dive into it, we're creators of lo-fi for the listeners of lo-fi. And even if a listener, a really engaged, active listener of lo-fi, if they don't know our project's name, they've probably listened to our music. And right after one of your tracks, they play one of my tracks, and then they play somebody else's tracks, and they don't even know it, but it's almost like this intertwined, collaborative form just through the genre as a whole. And that might add to it. But definitely yeah. the separation of the ego. And once again, coming from the electronic world where if we're doing photo shoots, you know, it's if you're playing a show in front of hundreds or thousands of people, it's hard to, if your ego's not inflated a little bit, you might be a sociopath. Because that's yeah. difficult, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, I mean, the goal is to keep it in check, but it's... It's when people are screaming in your face, it's hard to, and it's not, and that's not a bad thing either. And it's something that every show that I play, I try to balance, because even from that perspective, it's like, are they cheering for you, or are they just cheering because they're having a that's a high point of their life, right? Like just being at a show and having fun. So is it the experience? Is it you as the artist, or is it the experience? And it's likely the latter. But
As artists, you get to, you know, as artists, you also get to present that experience though, which is really cool. You know, like you're the one giving them that experience.
Totally. Totally. Well, and giving them such a, it is, man. And it get complex. And Carter, I want to dive into your move to Colorado a little bit, man. So you're based out of Maryland, but you're going to school in Denver, and as a fellow Coloradan, I'd love to chat about that, man.
Yeah, absolutely. So this trip I was telling you about, actually, when I learned this synthesizer, it was a trip to Colorado, and it's a trip that my family does every year. It has to been like at least 15 years at this point that we've gone out every year. We visit my grandparents out there. I don't know if you've ever heard. Have you ever heard of Crested Butte?
Oh, dude! So Crested Butte was the first place in Colorado that I ever visited. In 2010 or 2011. Yeah, man. Crested Butte.
First Secret place Stash I Pizza. Too. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, okay. That's insane. I love man. Secret Big Stash. Pizzas.
Oh, my gosh. Secret Stash and Bones. Oh, my gosh. So good.
Tell me more, man, because that's the place. That's the town that I visited when I said I'm moving to Colorado for college.
That is pretty crazy. I most likely the first place I ever visited in Colorado. I mean, I was very little, but I'm pretty sure it's the first place that we visited. But we go there every year. And incredible. I really fell in love with the mountains, the nature. I mean, you know, as someone who comes from the East Coast, it's a very different environment. And I felt like it really, you know, it really spoke to me on a lot of different levels, emotionally, spiritually. It really, you know, it made me feel a certain way that, you know, words couldn't even, you know, really describe. But, you know, when I was able to find a college that had a music program that I felt like accurately represented like the program I wanted to be in, and then also, you know, was in Colorado and surrounded by that nature and that, you know, that energy that I really fell in love with, you know, it was, you know, like, just I knew I needed to be out there. And so I'm really glad that I was able to go out there and go to school at least for a year. I'm taking a little bit of a break right now, but going back soon, so that's good.
Carter, that's incredible, man. I definitely share a similar storyline. So I'm originally from Iowa, and I grew up in Iowa. Is much much different than Colorado. And it was a Crested Butte visit where I was in Crested Butte, and I knew that Colorado was a place for me. And then I initially looked at Western State and Gunnison, which eventually led me to Fort Lewis College down in Durango. I felt the same calling, man. And it was funny. I can't remember who I was talking to. I think I was just talking to a friend, or I can't remember how the conversation got brought up, but I was thinking about my move to Colorado because I wasn't running away. I didn't hate where I came from. It was just a calling. It was I needed the mountains. And you know, now that I've lived in Colorado for almost 8 years, 9 years, quite a bit of time. But I've done a ton of mountain climbing, ran a couple ultra marathons in the mountains. I really like it's home, man. It's home, and it's
absolutely.
So it was interesting to think back on I would have either been 16 or 17 when I made that decision that I'm moving to a town where I don't know a single person. I have zero family connections, zero friend connections, and I'm just doing it. And it of course. And now, unfortunately, it was the best decision that I've ever made in my entire life. But when I was trying to reflect, if you would have talked to me at 16 or 17, I'm sure I would have given you a different answer, or maybe not. But it's interesting because I really can't pinpoint it except for the fact that I knew that's where I needed to go, and it all worked out. So So that mysterious feeling that you're talking about, I 100% get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really interesting that, you know, Crested Butte was the town, you know, that kind of it, because that place, it's just incredible. You're just in that little area surrounded by mountains, and it's just it's just the town and then the nature. And that there's, you know, the reason you're there is because, you know, it's just, you know, it's the place to be, you know, just the mountains are incredible. You know, it's something, you know, as you know, it's hard to explain.
It's so humbling, man. And I actually, when we first started chatting, I was up in Lafayette, which is in between Denver and Boulder. And I love the Front Range. I love Denver as a city. But I'm a country kid at heart. And my girlfriend and I had the opportunity to move down to the foothills outside of Monte Vista. And like, when I look up and I stare out the window in front of me, I'm staring at a 12,000 foot mountain. If I open up the studio door behind me, I'm looking at Great Sand Dunes National Park. I'm looking at the Sangre de Cristos. It's so magical, man. Like the sunrise this morning was just incredible. And I remember opening up the door and just looking at it. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, what is this real life? Like, this is a screensaver for somebody's desktop. And I just get to sip my coffee and look at it. Yeah. So,
it's hard to believe sometimes.
I feel very, It is. So I feel very fortunate to live here. And you, were you going to DU?
CU, Denver.
CU.
So University.
CU, yeah. Denver. So Auroria campus?
Yeah, Auroria campus.
Nice, man. Nice. Absolutely. Yeah, so you're down in the thick of it. And once again, I'm a country kid at heart, so nothing against Denver. It was just time for me to get out of the city again. But I've been to the convention center so many times. I've parked on Auroria campus and walked downtown and crazy. Yeah, so I know that neck of the woods, man. I actually one of my first job applications after I graduated from grad school was MSU Denver in their campus recreation department. And I didn't get the job, fortunately, but I could have been working on that campus in another life.
Crazy. I lived there this past year, and I really fell in love with the city of Denver. Denver was actually one of the places that I had never like explored when I was in Colorado. We always flew into Denver. We would fly in, but we would never stay. I went over there with my mom, sometime during the school year of senior year. And I went there and we actually just like explored the city. And I was like, wow, this is like a really special vibe. Cause you get kind of that, you know, we obviously get the city vibe, you know, but it has a very distinct feel, being that everyone there for the most part, you know, has some sort of connection to the mountains, you know, or some sort of want to be out there, I feel like, you know, and that for some reason, like it, you know, it casts like a whole vibe over the city that's very, very refreshing for me, you know, being that, you know, everyone around me where I'm from is just very well off and very, seem to have gone down the same path, you know, and it's just very repetitive and redundant. And so I was really happy to get something fresh and like really, you know, new in my life.
That's a really interesting point. So my buddy, D-Rock, he lived in Colorado. I think he was here for like 2 months or 3 months. And, he's originally from Long Island. And so I was kind of chatting with him about his experience of living in Denver. And his biggest takeaway was that like when people in Denver asked him what he did, it wasn't career wise. It's like, oh, like what,
yeah,
what do you do? Doesn't mean, oh, what do you do for a job? It's like, what do you do? Like, do you snowboard? Do you ski? Do you run? Do you climb mountains? And, I'm numb to that a little bit since I've been here for so long. And I've really I've never lived on the East Coast, so I can't say that I'm super familiar with that culture, but I have to imagine that's definitely a refreshing change of cultural pace of not what are you doing for a job, kid? It's like, oh, like what do you do? What do you do for enjoyment?
That was a really great way of putting it. I really love how you put that, because that's exactly how it is. Denver is like a really awesome place for like, you know, business and career and all that. But it's just all that paired with this just appreciation for what's right next door and what's right there. And it's the mountains, you know? And so I feel like it's a great, you know, combination of two worlds, you know, that seem like they wouldn't be able to cohabit, you know, be together. They wouldn't be able to, you know, be together in one place. But, you know, they really are, you know, it's really interesting.
Yeah. That's a really good point. A lot of my college friends, we're in Durango, which is Southwest Colorado, 6 hours from Denver, 6.5 hours from Denver. But of course, a lot of us moved to Denver eventually for pursuing careers. But even for friends that were that are still in my periphery, that are in my network, but it's mostly just social media contact. I don't know what most of them do for careers, to be honest. I just know what they do for hobbies. And I think that's good. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, I feel like, people just get so caught up in, you know, what are you doing to make a living for yourself? It's like, well, really, what are you doing to make yourself happy and feel the most like yourself?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's really important, you know? We just get so caught up in the other stuff. It's hard to see.
Wow. Yeah, that's a really great point. I feel even more blessed and fortunate to be living in Colorado just because of that fact. So what other parts of Colorado are your favorite aside from Crested Butte and Denver?
Yeah, so Crested Butte and Denver, definitely up there. I've been around, like, it's hard to say, like, there's some places over around Gunnison that my family's explored. We've explored some, like, I don't know, like Southwest Colorado area, like over kind of by New Mexico and like the Four Corners.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's really pretty over there. I've hiked some mountains over there and visited some towns. We've actually been to Durango as well. I visited Durango and been there. So yeah, it just overall the whole state just like really just inspires me and makes me feel like so motivated to do so many things.
Dude, well, and the cool part about Southwest Colorado, so Durango, you have, then you have like Mancos, Cortez, but then you have Telluride, which is a beautiful town in itself. But it's Southwest Colorado is still the wild, wild west a little bit, because as far as mountain exploration, like if you go into all the millions of people that live in Denver, well, they're heading to the mountains on the weekends, so they're going close. But when, like where I live, the mountain range that I'm literally staring at right now, it's where the last grizzly bear in Colorado was ever found, which was in like the 1970s. But I love that fact in my head, because that just shows, because they thought grizzly bears didn't exist in Colorado for like 30 or 40 years up until that point. And so I'm like, wow. Oh yeah, I get to run in like the most remote part of Colorado. That's pretty, untouched. And so you definitely get to more rural, more disconnected vibe, which once again for life is at least for me at this point in my life is a good thing. So I'm stoked that you got a similar vibe from Southwest Colorado, because it's definitely a special place in my heart. And I want to talk to you about the plans that you have coming up, and I don't want to be a salesman for my alma mater Fort Lewis College, but Fort Lewis College in Durango is a pretty good place to go if you're reconsidering your academic career route.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, for me, in terms of like school, I'm looking forward to a lot of things that CU Denver I think allows me to do. One thing, like, I was really, like, this past year, I was just really enjoying the amount of music-related classes I was taking. like just all of the audio production, you know, the sound classes, you know, really just getting into it, and not really focusing too much on things that I don't really want to do, you know, like all the gen ed classes. Like, you know, I had to take like one or two, but like it's not anything overbearing, which is amazing. So
yeah, is CU Denver, I mean, it's still, is it technically a liberal arts college, university?
I don't think so, because the degree that I'm getting is actually a BS. It's a Bachelor's of Sciences. So it's actually not, I don't think, at least my degree, and I think a lot of degrees in the program or at the school are more science related, being also that it's like it's in the city. I think I know that like a big part of it is also like the engineering program, and so I think largely it's like medical and, you know, engineering type things, and I think maybe that kind of worked its way into the music program in a way, which is really cool, at least from my perspective, because I feel like, you know, getting something that's like, oh, like, you know, you have like an engineering degree in like music instead of like an arts degree in music, you know, I feel like one could help me better, at least like in the city, especially with getting a job and that sort of thing. So I'm really looking forward to like that whole process.
Do they offer the same program at CU Boulder?
So they offer a really similar one. And one of the big things that drew me, or it turned me off from the program and a lot of other colleges in the United States, was that these music programs, right, these like recording arts programs, you would have to play one instrument and have to audition for the program. And that was one thing that I was really not looking to do. I'm a multi-instrumentalist person, and I play multiple instruments and am well versed in that area of music, but it wasn't something that I wanted to do in college and wanted to make that much of a priority. I really wanted to focus on that, you know, that like kind of engineering, you know, audio side of music and my degree for that. And so CU Boulder has like essentially the same program, but you have to audition with an instrument. And so that's what led me to Denver.
That's I really love your perspective on that. And so when I was going to Fort Lewis, I was a marketing major. I wasn't a music minor, but I participated in symphonic band. I took saxophone lessons. I took piano classes. I participated in ensembles and quartets. And it was interesting to navigate that culture from the outsider perspective. Because they're like my saxophone professor, and he conducted the symphonic band as well one of the years that I was in it. But some really, really beautiful people, but the culture was not for me, that classical musician culture. And it's funny, I had a call with one of my college buddies who he did graduate with a degree in music education from Fort Lewis, and he's been gigging as a fiddler for bluegrass bands. He's super talented, like very well versed. But both him and I were just talking about that classical musician culture, and oof, it's not for me. I remember when I first showed my saxophone professor, when I first showed him Ableton, I thought I was showing him gold. I thought I was like showing him a portal into a new musical universe. And he was relatively open, but still skeptical. And I'm like, how don't you see this, man? Like you can play a bajillion instruments. How do you not see this as another instrument that you can add to your repertoire? Not only another instrument, but an instrument that infuses and allows you to do so much more.
Absolutely.
So I really respect your perspective on identifying that even before choosing your academic program. And I'm grateful to hear that there's a program out there that exists, because I think that has to be relatively new, at least within the past decade, of it really ever being an option.
No, it absolutely is. It's definitely a new thing. And even within the program, there's a class that you can take for Ableton. Like, you can take an Ableton class, mm-hmm. and you can have Ableton be your instrument. Or you could have, like, a DAW be your instrument. I don't think it even has to be Ableton. Mm-hmm. It can be anything. And, like, that's, like, just incredible. That, like, this school is truly recognizing the power of, you know, music production and these more modern ways with laptops and these DAWs. Like, you know, obviously that needs to be recognized. And, you know, if, you know, you're going to have programs, you know, to try and, you know, help guide young producers into a career in the music industry, you know, I don't feel like you should, you know, have it so, you know, so strict and, like, you know, these older ways with mm-hmm. the musical instruments, you know, like the classical, all that, you know, like, we need to, you know, if you want to be a music producer, then let's, you know, help you be a music producer, you know, like, and if you want to take, like, you know, in my school, I had to take a guitar class, a piano class, theory, like, they still, you know, they want you to know that stuff. But if you have to audition with an instrument, that's a crazy, crazy commitment. Like, that's a crazy amount of time to practicing, rehearsing that instrument, individual lessons. Like, it just doesn't seem necessary for the amount of people that want to just do the production side or even just the engineering side. You know, it's just, I think there's probably a lot of people that have been turned off, honestly, just because I, you know, I did a lot of research, and I can't remember how many schools that I found that just had a production, audio production major that wasn't also focused on instrumentalists, like the instrumentalist side. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy with the program, and I really hope that more schools follow suit. You know, I think it'd be really special.
Well, I think they will. I think I think the marketplace as a whole will, like, if there's demand for it, it'll get created. And I think there's probably a lot of artists similar to you, and even coming with an instrumentalist background, of just saying, I don't want to do this. I just want to produce. And it's so once, going back to my buddy, shout out to Denon. He's still in Durango, and he conducts, I think, is a 100 person orchestra of middle school students. But during COVID, as a band teacher, they essentially nixed all lessons, all symphonic practices or orchestral practices. And so he transitioned heavy and got a ton of different grants and really kicked up the production program for these middle school students. And he's actually, from what I understand, he's a front runner of music production courses for at a middle school, high school level in the state of Colorado. And he's doing some really spectacular things. And I can't help but think of this seventh or eighth grader. So what, they're like 12 or 13, learning Ableton at such a young age. Like, these kids, there's not all of them are going to be interested in it. But the kids that really latch on and that becomes their point of focus, the art that they're going to be creating by the time they graduate from high school is going to be insane. And I love that it's becoming a part of the educational program. And for him, once again, as somebody that's, you know, he's a professional at music theory. He has a bachelor's degree in music theory, and he did the classical route. And then for him to be able to, he obviously understands the value and the power of what production and being able to navigate a DAW for any musician can be. Or even for him, it's like, well, you can teach a kid music theory on piano, or you could just teach him music theory on piano roll. And you can get the job done both ways. And what a powerful addition to a musician's repertoire. And it's interesting to gauge the interest. I was also I was on a hike with one of my former bosses from Fort Lewis, just awesome dude. And his son, I think, is going into like sophomore year, junior year of high school. And he was with his buddies and they were talking about like kind of creating a band. And I was talking to them about production and their eyes kind of glazed over. And I was like, fellas, you don't understand. Like, start learning how to produce and you'll be able to take your band wherever you want it to go.
Yeah, absolutely. it's crazy. Like, I don't know, like what you explained earlier is what happened to me almost, except it was with my best friend. I saw him producing and when I was like in sixth, seventh grade as like a 12-year-old, 13-year-old or whatever. And I was just instantly, you know, latched on to the process that he was involved in. And you know, it, you know, went from me just watching him to me like helping him to me getting my own set up and trying it on my own, you know. And then, you know, I started using GarageBand on my iPhone in middle school.
Yep.
And that's what I started. And I made lo-fi beats, you know, and I just, that's what I did. Now, like, honestly, I probably should have started with this, but that's one of the reasons I got into lo-fi beats in the first place, is because it was the most manageable to make on GarageBand. Like, you could make some pretty solid beats on GarageBand for sure. And I tried to like record vocals on there and do, I even did like some other types of songs. But yeah, like, you know, it, you know, it really, you know, just, I got that experience at such a young age, you know. And, you know, by the time I graduated high school, I was, you know, I've been using FL Studio for a couple of years and I was making some pretty, you know, high quality stuff. And it was really cool. And it's like, well, now I know what I want to do with my life. And so, you know, here's a school that I think could really help me, you know. But instead, you know, I see a lot of kids who are starting that process now in college and they're like, oh, here's a school. For, you know, production, let me go see, you know, that's what I want to do. But they didn't have, you know, the 6-7 years before that when they learned how to do it in middle school, you know. And I feel really grateful to have had that experience for sure.
Well, that's incredible. And it gives you just such a such a head start. And I for the middle schoolers that are in middle school today, like I can't wait for them to continue to push the boundaries and push all types of different genres so much further, just because they have that skill and that talent.
And they are like right now, you know?
They are. I know they already are, which is crazy. It's incredible. And so Carter, tell us about the upcoming year, man. You said you have a few different changes coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. So this upcoming semester is really, is going to be like a reset for me mentally in a lot of ways. The summer was kind of just a roller coaster all over the place. I was dealing with lots of mental health issues, but now I feel like I have a better grasp on all that. And so for this upcoming semester, I'm trying to work on a few different projects at the moment, but just because of everything that like the summer entailed, I'm having a really hard time being creative at the moment. And you know, it obviously ebbs and flows. You know, it's nothing I'm not used to. But what I will say, like, I have like a lot of stuff already completed, which is really nice. And so I'm trying to be really consistent with releasing in this upcoming fall. I'm going to really try and pump out like some high quality stuff. And at least for the J-Bridge project, I have this like this album that is very unconventional. It's not a lo-fi album by any means. It has, you know, a few really experimental like electronic songs on there, even like some like synthwave vibes, but it also has like some more chill hop lo-fi songs intertwined here and there, but like I feel like I could, you know, like part of my plan is just to put those songs out, you know, on a platform, because I think kind of what I realize in my journey right now is that, you know, I'm in a specific place in my journey right now, like musically, where, you know, I shouldn't just be focusing on, oh my gosh, is this song going to get X amount of plays? Let me try and, you know, pop off in this way. I need to be grinding at promoting this, this, and this. Like, you know, part of it, I feel like for my own sake, is just having a catalog of something to present, you know. It's just, you know, being able to say, here's all of the stuff I've worked on. You know, just that on, you know, in of itself shows the initiative to finish songs, you know, work on them, finish them, put them out, you know. And so I think, you know, I've just because the album isn't lo-fi oriented, I think I'm going to be doing an independent release with that. I believe I'm not 100% sure yet. But I'll definitely be like releasing a few singles for it and then hopefully the full album sometime in the fall, hopefully.
Awesome. Well, Carter, that's exciting to hear, man. And I'm excited to hear it. And I always love when people discuss either their affinity for or the action that they've already put into just creating something experimental and being able to create art that is art simply for the sake of art and not necessarily even thinking about the business branding or the genre branding and just creating for the sake of creating, which especially after a difficult period in life, sometimes that's the best thing you can do is express whatever those emotions are in whatever form that they take on, dude. So Carter, extremely, extremely excited to hear that. And I think that's a solid place to end this episode, man. So if people want to collaborate with you or just chat with you or get to know you a little bit better, where should they go to get in touch with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm super active on my Instagram. My Instagram is this is JBridge, all lowercase, one word. And then I'm thinking about starting a Discord. Like I already have a Discord, but I would really like to funnel more people there. And I would really like to form like a small community, like, dude, like, you know, even like 50 people, you know, 20 people, whatever it is, you know, like I would love to have a community kind of focused on, like, not like I don't want it to be focused on me, obviously, but, you know, like a JBridge Discord where, you know, we can share songs, you know, support each other. I've got some ideas for, like, you know, sound packs and stuff like that. But yeah, definitely, you know, my Instagram, I'm active, and then planning on starting a Discord, you know, so if I could get that going, that's another place to reach me as well. But yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, Carter, when you get that, Discord launched, just let me know, man. I'll promote it. And, I'll have your Instagram via hyperlink in the description of this episode. So it'll make it easy for people to click on and, get a hold of you. But dude, I'm so happy we did this, and it's crazy how similar our storylines match up to each other, man. So excited for you to get back to Colorado eventually. Maybe we can climb a mountain, man.
Dude, yeah, absolutely. I really love your vibe, man. I would love to, you know, hear more from you and keep in touch because, you know, I really enjoy talking to you.
Hey, likewise, man. Everybody tuning in, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. Make sure to follow Carter on Instagram. Stay tuned for that Discord. I'm going to go do Colorado things. Peace.
Oh, yeah.